As I'm sure everybody is aware, so to the end of this week is Pesach Sheni. Now, usually we think about Pesach Sheni, so it doesn't mean all that much to us. I mean, the days of the Beis HaMikdash meant an awful lot to people. Anyone who didn't have the opportunity to bring Korban Pesach would come to Yerushalayim, would come to the Beis HaMikdash and offer a Korban Pesach. And certain of the halachas of the Yom Tov Pesach apply, many of them don't. But it was clearly a very big ordeal, Bezman Shel Beis HaMikdash Rekayim. Today, probably the only thing we have left of Pesach Sheni is, there are actually different customs about this, some do say Tachanun, some don't say Tachanun, some say in the morning, some don't say in the afternoon. Some people have a custom of eating matzah, some people don't. Some people eat Kneiluch, some don't. Some eat it in the afternoon, some eat it at night, some don't. I mean, you have just about every possible array of minhagim that revolve around Pesach Sheni, but in terms of pure halacha, there's not all that much that's really relevant for us. Nevertheless, there is actually a very, very significant area of halacha that actually has its roots in the sugya, in the topic of Pesach Sheni. And I thought we'd try to learn the sugya together tonight a little bit, really on two different levels, both on the level of halacha, try to glean a little bit some of the halachic ramifications that Pesach Sheni could impact on us. And then number two, perhaps a little bit in the world of Hashkaf, a little bit in the world of the Rechizuch, his Oros, to be able to get a little bit of a lesson to walk away with something in terms of a greater, you know, a greater scheme, greater picture of things as relates to many aspects of Avodas Hashem. So let's begin with the sugya of Pesach Sheni. And the very institution of Pesach Sheni is really a remarkable one because the starting point should have been, and in fact, the starting point is the finishing point for many, many mitzvahs that, I guess as the phrase goes, you snooze, you lose. Means you missed it. You missed it. It's over. Finish. Come back next year. If a person didn't hear shofar in Rosh Hashanah, there is no tashlumin. There is no makeup for it. Hopefully, Mitzvah Shem next year, things will be better. A person missed the offering of Korban Pesach, and we're not criticizing the person. We're not condemning the person. It was a justified excuse. He was tomei. He was impure. He was bederech rechoka. He was too far away, and very justifiably missed Korban Pesach. I would have said that, well, I have to try again next year. Not only would I have said that, but in a certain sense, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu said also. Because when Moshe Rabbeinu was first presented by that very first year in the Midbar, when they offered the Korban Pesach, there were a group of people who were Tomei, even though rightfully so. There were people who were doing a mitzvah. They were the members of the Chavah Kaddish, in effect. There were people who were justifiably Tomei. The Gemara has different opinions who exactly they had come into contact with. Some say they were the ones who were carrying the bones of Yosef, and some say they were the ones who took care of Nadav and Avihu. So whoever they were clearly doing a great mitzvah. And yet when they come to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe says, you know, if you'd ask me, I don't have a solution. I don't know what to tell you. I don't think there's an answer for you fellows. I think you have to wait till next year. But Moshe Rabbeinu, out of his great anivus, with his great humility, said, "Imdu ve'eshba ma'itzav Hashem l'chem." You know what? Wait. Let's hear what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to say about this. I'm not sure what the answer is. Let's ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in fact, at that point, it was nischadish to us. It was revealed to us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu the parish of Pesach Sheni. So Pesach Sheni is a tremendous chiddush in halacha, and the very notion of a tashlumin, the notion of a makeup, is something which is really very startling. And yet, the Torah says it exists. Not by all mitzvahs, and not even by all kabbonos, but there is a concept of a makeup for something as significant as Korban Pesach. There is a possibility to make up something, b'taras tashlumin. And it's really that sugif tashlumin that I want to learn with you today. This idea that sometimes, not all the time, but in certain limited cases, the halacha does build in for this makeup concept of, in a sense, a missed opportunity that can be rectified. Let's see how this plays out in our lives, even out of the realm of the Beis HaMikdash, out of the realm of Pesach Sheni. So one of the first areas where this idea of Tashlumen probably impacts us, perhaps even more than any other areas, in the realm of Hilchos Tefillah. We're all familiar with the fact there's a concept of Tashlumen in Tefillah. If a person missed Davening Shacharis, they can make it up in Mincha. Person missed Mincha, make it up in Ma'ariv. Ma'ariv can make it up in Shacharis the following Tefillah. So there is a concept of Tashlumen. And in fact, the Gemara in the fourth parak of Maseches Brachos tells us that it's really a tremendous chiddush that there is a concept of tashlumin, because if you would have asked me once again, tefillah shouldn't be all that different from the korban tamid, the daily offering, which in fact there was no tashlumin for. If a person, Klal Yisrael as a whole, for whatever reason, couldn't bring the korban this morning, there is no makeup later in the afternoon. Come back tomorrow morning. If Klal Yisrael missed bringing the korban tovin in the afternoon, there is no makeup tomorrow morning. Bring tomorrow afternoon. So if tfilos or keneged tmidim tiknum, if the institution of davening is patterned after the offering of the korbanos tmidim, why in fact is there tashlumin? It really should not be so. And the Gemara says, you're right, it really shouldn't. But there is a dual component, a second aspect of a tefillah that's playing out. Tefillah is not just keneged the korban tamid, but tefillah is related to the concept of rachamim. Of course, one of the major reasons why we daven in the first place is to attain rachamim shemayim. We turn, beseech HaKadosh Baruch Hu for mercy. Mercy, rachamim, there's always a second chance. For rachamim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll give you a few more hours. I'll give you tomorrow morning to make up for the missed rachamim of the night before. So say Chazal that there is a concept of tashlumin for tefillah because of the unique aspect of tefillah of rachamim shemayim. However, even rachamim shemayim in a certain sense has certain limitations. One cannot abuse this privilege of rachamim, and one cannot abuse the privilege of tashlumin. And it's for this reason that the halacha tells us that tashlumin in Uchas Tefillah is reserved for the person who it was out of his control. It was a shogeg. It was an ones. Someone who justifiably didn't daven. Somebody who maybe was a little bit negligent, but he didn't really intentionally not daven. He missed the alarm in the morning. He overslept. Something came up and it totally slipped his mind. He forgot to daven mincha. Those are cases where the halacha permits the tashlumin. The person who knew full well that it's mantvila, but just dilly-dallied and said, I'm not davening now. Why should I bother davening now? I can daven in a few hours from now, tashlumin. No, say Chazal. A person who is mevatel tefillah b'mezid intentionally, there is no way to rectify that. There is no tashlumin for that. And in a similar vein, tashlumin is very limited in scope, that it only applies from one tefillah to the next. You cannot make up tefillahs that you missed 6 years before. There's rachamim, and then there's abusing the power of rachamim. I remember when I was a little boy, so I remember I had probably more than one time I had missed davening, but I had missed davening for something, and I felt very bad about it. And I remember at the time, my father, Lava Shalom, said to me, don't feel so bad. There's a principle of tashlumin. He was actually the first one who taught me this halacha about tashlumin, and said, if you, for whatever reason, couldn't daven shacharis, let's daven mincha twice. At the time, I guess, it didn't dawn on him to tell me that it only works from one tefillah to the next. I remember after that having this grandiose idea. Well, I'm in the middle of playing ball in the afternoon. I don't really want to stop playing. It's because it's mincha time. No problem. I'll make up tonight. I'll make up tomorrow. I'll make up next week. So I was under the age of my mitzvah. I devised for myself this whole tashlumin package. I was being mashed in tefillahs from weeks before. So eventually I learned the halacha that that's not acceptable. Even tashlumin, yesh gavul, there's a boundary, there's an end. And again, it has to be the immediate tefillah. It has to be something that wasn't done intentionally. But there is a parish, there is a halacha of tashlumin. It is because tashlumin in uchos tefillah is so directly linked to the concept of rachamim that the Rishonim tell us that one of the tefillahs that we have actually is not really a tefillah of rachamim. And of all the tefillahs that we have, it's actually tefillahs musaf that is really the least related to the notion of rachamim shemayim. Musaf, say Chazal, is a tefillah for one reason alone. It corresponds to the korban musaf. And therefore, that notion of rachamim, and in fact, even the nusach of the tefillah of musaf, is not similar to the other tefillahs. The nusach, the theme of musaf, is very, very clear. It's uneshama parim smaseinu. It's corresponding to our karbonos. We mentioned the psukei hayom, the psukei ha-karbon ha-musafim. That is the entire theme of the tefillah. And therefore, for that, there is no tashlumin. A person who missed davening musaf and Shabbos, one could technically daven musaf the whole day, because one could technically bring the korban musaf the whole day, but you cannot daven Shabbos musaf on Motzei Shabbos. You cannot daven Rosh Chodesh's musaf the next day. You cannot make up a Yom Tov musaf, because in karbonos, with the exception of the Korban Pesach, we have a rule called Avri Yom HaBotel Korbono. When the day is over, the Korban can no longer be brought. So yes, there is a notion of Tashlumin Uchos Tefillah. Yes, it is limited to that the immediate following tefillah, it is limited to shogeg, onus, etc., and it would not be applicable to the tefillah of Musaf, because tefillah is fundamentally Musaf, is fundamentally a different type of a tefillah. So this is the first area of halacha where Hilchos Tashlumin speaks to us, even in today's world, even in the absence of a Beis HaMikdash. Are there other areas of halacha that are relevant for us today that also have their roots in Hilchos Tashlumin? So the Gemara tells us that we know that each of the Shalosh Regalim, there is a mitzvah to come to the Beis HaMikdash. A person has to come and offer a whole series of karbanos, but has to offer Korban Olos and Korban Shlomim and different kinds of Korban Shlomim and partake of the meat of the Korban Shlomim. The entire picture of Aliyah L'Regel and Simchas Yomtov that took place Bezman Shabbos Mikdash HaKayim is supposed to be performed on each of the Yom Tovim, each of the Shalosh Regalim. And yet Shavuos, we find a very, very strange thing, that the Yom Tov of Shavuos is really, really short. Min HaTorah, it's all of one day. And therefore, it's conceivable that a person may not have the chance and have the opportunity to even make it to the Beis HaMikdash to bring those kabbanos. Now, the Gemara tells us there is a din that is derived from Sukkim and Din Min HaTorah, that there is a whole week following Shavuos that is, in a sense, a tashlumin for the celebration of Shavuos. Just as Pesach is 7 days, and Sukkot is 7 days, with an additional day of Shmini Atzeres, so to Shavuos is also 7 days. Now, we usually think of Shavuos as being a one-day Yom Tov. It's a one-day, I mean, obviously in Chutzlar, it's 2 days as a Sveik of the Yoma, but Min HaTorah and Eretz Yisrael, of course, today, it's a one-day Yom Tov. Yes, it's a one-day Yom Tov. The Shavuos that we know of today, the Shavuos of Chutzlar Mikdash, the Shavuos of Issa Malacha alone, lacking all the trimmings and all the additional components of Kabbanah Sayom, so Shavuos is a one-day Yom Tov. But Shavuos Bezvan Shabbos HaMikdash HaKayim was, in a sense, a seven-day Yom Tov. It was 1 day Issa Malacha, and it was a whole week of Tashlumin. In fact, that's why the Meshech Chochma suggests, that's why we find, when it comes to the mitzvah of Sefiras HaOmer, why we count both days and weeks. If you ever wonder, it's such a strange mitzvah. We're counting down to Shavuos, and we count the days, we count the weeks. We don't know how to keep count. We don't know how to tally up the numbers. Why the necessity to count days and weeks? So the Rosh explains, Meshech Chochma explains, that the countdown of Sefiras HaOmer is a countdown to the celebration of Shavuos. And there are really two different celebrations of Shavuos. Is the one-day celebration, and there's the week-long celebration. The one-day celebration is led up to with day-by-day counting. The week-long celebration is led up to by weekly countings. That's why, in fact, the Meshech Chochma suggests there is one remarkable opinion in Rishonim about the mitzvah of Sefiras HaOmer. There is a big question in the Rishonim whether the mitzvah of Sefiras HaOmer in today's world, with the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, is a mitzvah in HaTorah or a mitzvah in the Rabbanan. According to the opinion of Tosfos, Svira today is only midirabbanan. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. We don't have a Korban HaOmer. And therefore, the counting that we're doing today is what we call Zeichel HaMikdash. It's simply to remind us of what things were like in the old days. The Rambam's view is that Sefiras HaOmer is Min HaTorah, even in the absence of a Beis HaMikdash. And there's one fascinating view in Rishonim, Rabbeinu Yerucham, almost a compromise view, walking a tightrope. Rabbeinu Yerucham says that the days of counting are D'araisa, yet the weeks of counting are only midrabbanan. And no one's quite sure why that should be so. I understand the extreme view of Tosfos that Sefiras derabbanan. I understand the Rambam's other extreme view, Sefiras deraisa. How can we explain away logically why it's quasi deraisa, quasi derabbanan? Some components deraisa, some derabbanan. So the Meshech Chochma explains that the day part, the counting of the days, which corresponds to the celebration of the daily Yantar of Shavuos, which applies even outside the Beis HaMikdash, the counting of the days is very much Min HaTorah today. The counting of the weeks makes no sense Min HaTorah today, because the counting of the weeks is the leading up to the week-long celebration of Shavuos, which Nebuch doesn't exist Bezman She'ein Beis HaMikdash HaKayim, and therefore the counting of weeks cannot possibly be Min HaTorah, and in fact, is only a lower level mitzvah of a mitzvah derabbanan of Zeichel HaMikdash. So getting back to our discussion about Shavuos, there is a concept of the 7 days following being a time of Tashlumin. Now again, this Bancho Beis HaMikdash HaKayim that was very important. For us, it's significantly less important. Interestingly enough, the only real practical difference that we have from this makeup time for Shavuos, the post-Shavuos time of Tashlumin, is we find concerning the halachas of the Minhagim of Tachanun. You know, as a general rule, Tachanun is not recited on joyous occasions during the year. There are certain days during the year where obviously no Tachanun is recited. Then there are certain days that are a little bit less obvious. There are actually certain days that are questionable days. some of the biggies that everybody agrees to. Nobody says Tachnor on Chanukah, nobody says Tachnor on Purim, nobody says Tachnor on Rish Chodesh, Chol HaMoed. Those are obvious days. Then you have other days in the Jewish calendar which are quite easy to understand exactly why we don't say Tachnor, we don't say Tachnor on Tu B'Shvat. Kind of hard for us to understand exactly what the great Simcha involved in Tu B'Shvat is. That's our custom. We don't say Tachnor on Tu B'Shvat. Even the not saying Tachnor on Lag BaOmer is a whole question as to where that comes from, what's that based on exactly. And again, certain other days of the year, not exactly clear whether we should or should not be reciting Tachnor. We mentioned before Pesach Sheni is actually two different, there are many different customs concerning the recitation of Tachnor on Pesach Sheni. And in fact, there is a machlokas, there is actually a dispute between two different minhagim, that the minhagim are still exist as manazet, two very different customs, as to when do we resume saying Tachnor again after Shavuos. We don't say Tachnor obviously on Rosh Chodesh Sivan, like any other Rosh Chodesh. We don't say Tachnor during the Shlosha Simei Havbalah, the 3 days preparing for Shavuos. Even on Bei Sivan, which is not Rosh Chodesh and not yet the Shlosha Simei Havbalah, for some reason, we don't say Tachnor then either. We don't say Tachnor on Issu Chag, the day after Shavuos, like any other Issu Chag. We never recite Tachnor the day after Yom Tov. But, well, I shouldn't say that 100%. That's a little bit of a tricky statement, not always 100% true. Pesach gets a little bit different, and Sukkot maybe we don't say the whole month of Tishrei, so it's a little bit more complicated than what I just said. But at least on the day after Shavuos, you don't recite Tachnor. And there is some of a custom that they don't say Tachnor for the whole week following Shavuos. Where in the world did that custom come from? It came from this concept of Tashlumin. It came from the fact that Bizman Shabbos HaMikdash HaKayim, the days after Shavuos were actually days of great joy. There were days where many, many people who did not have the opportunity to come to be in Yerushalayim for Shavuos proper would now come 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days later and offer the kabbanos and celebrate. And it was days of great joy. And therefore, it would be inappropriate to recite Tachnor. And others responded, if you lived in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, maybe it's inappropriate to recite Tachnor. Today, there's nothing special. Nothing is happening on the calendar for the week following Shavuos. And therefore, one should recite Tachnor. And there are different customs until this very day about the recitation, lack thereof. And again, it all boils down to this question of the unique role of these days of Tashlumin, specifically today. I had somewhat of a strange discussion, a conversation about this very topic, about whether one should or should not recite Tachnor during the days following Shavuos. I had this discussion actually in the city of Krakow, Poland, in the shul of the Ramah. Many of you may have visited Krakow, may have been davening at the schos to daven in the shul of the Ramah. So several years ago, I was visiting with a few people from America. We were accompanying a group of young men who were tamidim in the yeshiva in Berlin. Well, a whole group of balei tshuva, and we were taking them around different places in Europe. And I was involved in that trip and saying different shiurim and different chizuk and service, etc. Among the many places, I had the particular schos that day of saying a shiur in the Ramah Shul. I chose to give a topic of the shiur about a sugi that happened in that shul, tshuva in the Ramah, that the shaila had actually happened in that very space, the very, very place where we were davening. So I gave a whole shiur about what the Ramah said and what others questioned the Ramah, and a whole try to bring it to life in terms of a Krakow. And then after the shiur, we davened mincha there. And right after, as we finished Parnas, we finished Chazas HaShatz. So somebody raised the question, should we say Tachnun today? And the reason why the question was, is because it was actually within that week after Shavuos. It was a couple of days after Shavuos, within that week of Tashlumin. And the question arose, well, what's the minhag? What's the minhag in the Ramosh? What's the minhag in Krakow? Do they say Tachnor after Issu Chag? Nobody says on Issu Chag itself, but this was 3-4 days later. What's the minhag in Krakow? So it was a little bit of a strange question. I said, you know what? Why don't we ask the Ramah? Let's see what the Ramah says. So it happened to be, there were a couple of svarim on the shelf there, and there was, believe it or not, one or two halakhah of Mishnah Berurah. And the chelik of Aruchas Tachron, like days happened to have been there on the shelf. They had a shkacha protest. So I took the Mishnah Berurah with the Piskei Ramah off the shelf, and I opened it up, I looked around a little bit, and I noticed that the Ramah says not to say Tachron on Issu Chag of Shavuos, and he does not mention anything past Issu Chag. So I turned to the group there and I said that it would appear to me that the minhag of the Ramah, the minhag of the Shul and Krach, is the Ramah Shul, is that we do say Tachron. That the Ramah himself only says to delete Tachnor on Issu Chag, but the rest of the week you do say Tachnor. So believe it or not, somebody turned around and argued with me and said, no, I'm going to disagree with your Pesach. I thought, you don't disagree with me, you disagree with the Ramah, Tishul. They said, no. They said to me that they think that the Minhagi HaRamah are not binding anymore on the Shul, because since Nebuch, during the war. So the Jewish community of Krakow was destroyed. And even though now, Baruch Hashem, years later, there are some people who are still davening in the Ramah Shul, it's not a continuation of the Minhagi Ramah. It's a new shul. It's a brand new shul with new Minhagi Tzibur. And we're not bound to what the meaning was 500 years before. That was a shtickle Torah. It's a whole long shtickle Torah. It was faster to say Tachlid than to argue about the shtickle Torah. He says, nope, it's a whole shtickle Torah that he thinks you should say Tachlid today.
So we're not bound by the meaning of the Ramah. So whose meaning are we bound by? So we said, well, there is no real meaning kavua there that we know of. What's the meaning of the Olam here?
It's broken. Sorry, cool. Open.
Rabbi Sobolevsky? Sorry, we can't hear you. Can you hear me?
I'm sorry to interrupt
you. That's bad.
Okay, now.
Wait, okay. So now, can you hear me now?
Right, but I think the past minute we...
Oh, so just tell me quickly, what was the last thing I said? What was the last punchline that we said? And remember?
You're arguing with the Ramah.
I was arguing with the Ramah. Okay, go back to the Ramah. Okay, all right.
Wait. Whose minhag is koveya?
Okay, good. Okay, good. Okay. So my vote was, you see, this tachnun, they don't want to go with this tachnun. Even the microphones go get nervous when it comes to tachnun. Everyone, you think it's the most exciting thing to think of all the others. So if you have any other problems, so just put yourself on the video and start waving and screaming, and it'll change. Okay. So anyway, so I had said that we should follow the minhag Ramah, and the minhag Ramah clearly was to say tachnun the whole week. And the other fellow said to me, no, not true. That the minhag Ramah was bottled, since the shul of the Ramah was not functioning for so many years after the Holocaust, and therefore the minhagim are no longer binding, and now it's a new shul. It's a new shul that happens to be taking place in Krakow. So what's the minhag of the new shul in Krakow? There was no minhag. The minhag was whoever the tourists said. So that particular group of tourists voted not to say tachanim. They must have come from Tinex. They said, we don't say tachanim Tinex. We don't say tachanim here. So the vote of that group was that we shouldn't say tachanim. So I'm standing there and arguing with a bunch of people about whether we should follow the 500-year minhag of the Ramah or the minhag that a bunch of guys 10 minutes ago just decided it should be the new minhag in Krakow. So I thought it was a very strange machlokes. It reminded me at the time that I had a similar disagreement with somebody. I seem to have all the bad luck. Whenever I'm stuck in Europe, I end up in a fight with somebody about tachanun. I was once in Rome. I was coming back from Eretz Yisrael, and there was engine trouble on the plane. They had to make an unexpected... Depending on whether you want to call it emergency landing or not, it's unexpected, unanticipated stop in Rome. And we had to wait for a few hours to be able to get us onto a different plane. It was a Sunday morning, and we got off the plane, and we had a daven shacharis. It was one of the 1 a.m. flights leaving here, so we weren't expecting to daven. But here we were stuck in Rome. So we daven shacharis in Rome. So when we got to Tachanun, so there was a fellow there, one of the Hasidim, who was part of a bunch of YU boys, and a couple of Hasidim were davening shacharis together. And one of the Hasidim turned to us and says, there's no Tachanun today. So I was thinking to myself, I'm going through my list of which Rebbe's died today. I said, why is there no Tachanun today? So he said, no, there's no Tachanun because there's no Sefer Torah. A new story, there's no Sefer Torah. So that's not true. There are more quotes as a custom that when there's no Sefer Torah, then you don't fall Tachanun. You don't go curry, you don't put your hand in your head, but we don't say not to say Tachanun. So as I'm sitting and trying to make sense out of this comment about that there's no Tachanun altogether, one of the fellows from the YVS Medrash turns around and he says, what do you mean there's no Sefer Torah? I have a Sefer Torah. And he opens up his knapsack and he's carrying a cloth, a small Sefer Torah, just a cloth, not even the 8 Chayans. He's carrying a cloth that there was a shul in America and asked him to bring back from a Sefer in Yerushalayim. So he's walking around, the kid, the 18-year-old YU kid's walking around with the Sefer Torah's knapsack. The chassid was blown away. So he said, okay, we have a Sefer Torah. So not only did we say Tachanun, we all felt Tachanun in the airport in Rome. We said Tachanun, the Nefilas Abayim, that's the din. Anyway, so you never know. Tachanun always brings out the best in people. So back to our story. So we have this notion of tashlumin in Hilchos Tefillah that speaks to us, the halacha. We have the concept of tashlumin in Hilchos Shavuos that every once in a while speaks to us a little bit in halacha. Are there any other aspects of Tashlumah that speak to us? So sometimes you have a situation in halacha that it's not even 100% clear whether something is really Tashlumah in the classic sense or not. Now, one of the examples is actually the mitzvah of Havdalah. We know that we have to recite Havdalah and mitzvah Shabbos. There's a question in the Rishon, is that a mitzvah in the Torah, a mitzvah in the Rabbanim? But the bottom line is, of course, we have to recite Havdalah. We recite Havdalah in Tefillah, then we recite Havdalah again, Alakos, a cup of grapes, just a cup of wine. And the Gemara tells us in the end of Maseches Pesachim that if for whatever reason a person missed Havdalah Mitzvah Shabbos, no problem. You can make up Havdalah for half the week. Until Tuesday night, you could still recite Havdalah. And it's not clear what is that based on. So that's a major machlokes in the Rishonim. Is that idea of making Havdalah till Tuesday night a function of Tashlumin? It means basically Havdalah is the Mitzvah Shabbos Mitzvah. It just is. If you missed Havdalah, Nebuch, the same way if you missed Shachrish, you can make up Mincha. You missed Mincha, you can make up Myron. You missed Havdalah Mitzvah Shabbos, you can make it up on Tuesday afternoon also. It's basically fundamentally as a function of Tashlumin. Well, the making up of Havdalah is not really a makeup. The Halach says you can make Havdalah after Shabbos. What's called after Shabbos? After Shabbos means till Tuesday. The week is divided into two portions. There's the first half of the week, which is the conclusion of last Shabbos. And then there's the beginning of the next week, which is the beginning of the next Shabbos, which begins Tuesday night. So you can make Havdalah until the end of Motzoi Shabbos. Motzoi Shabbos in Halacha means until Tuesday night. So when we recite Havdalah after Motzoi Shabbos, is it a Tashlum Dika Havdalah? Or is it just a regular Mitzvah Havdalah? No difference. As we say, Manafkud, what's the difference? Who cares? At the end of the day, you can make Havdalah until Tuesday night. That's the din. So why do we care whether it's a function of Tashlumin, whether it's a function of the Iker Zman, what's the practical difference? So just as an aside, when we speak about making up Havdalah or the Iker Zman, whatever you want to call it, this is only concerning the Bar Pregofen and Habrach of Amavdil. Bar Mevisam cannot be made up, Bar Mevish cannot be made up. Because Bar Mevisam and Bar Mevish have nothing to do with Havdalah. Now, that may sound like a strange statement. Don't we say it as part of Havdalah? Well, the Gemara says that neither of those brachas is related to Havdalah. Those are special brachas that Chazal instituted on Mitzvah Shabbos. The bracha Bor Mera'esh, the Gemara says explicitly, was instituted on Motzei Shabbos to commemorate the first creation of fire, when the Kodesh Baruch Hu gave Adam Arishon that knowledge to figure out how to rub two stones together and make fire. So we recite Bor Mera'esh to commemorate that. And the bracha Bor Mera'esh, according to most opinions, is because to make us feel a little bit better as our Neshama Yaseira, that extra little dimension of Neshama, leaves us. So those two brachas are Motzei Shabbos Dika brachas. And they really have nothing to do with Havdalah. The only reason why we almost connect them to Havdalah is we should cover a bracha. If any way you're making a bar priyagov, any way you make a bar meresh, why should you say it in the vacuum in the middle of nowhere? You know, tack it on to Havdalah, it gives it more chashivas, gives it more significance. So the chetchila, we recite those two brachas as part of the Seder Havdalah. But Mi'ikra Din, it's not necessary. Mi'ikra Din, if a person recited those brachas out of the realm of the, let's say a person for some reason didn't have spices, didn't have a fire, and they made Havdalah anyway, and then an hour later they get the summer egg, she makes the bracha later. But the bracha of Havdalah, when we're speaking about Havdalah now, we're talking about the Bar Pregofen and the Hamavdil. So that can be done till Tuesday night, but we're not quite sure, is that Tashlumin or not? So what's the difference practically? So the Rosh explains to us that the difference is very important. The rule of Tashlumin applies in the following scenario. If a person was obligated in a mitzvah and they couldn't perform that mitzvah or they didn't for whatever reason perform the mitzvah, then we can discuss Tashlumin. What if a person wasn't obligated in the mitzvah to begin with? They weren't obligated in the main mitzvah, so then Tashlumin is irrelevant. Tashlumin is a makeup for somebody who had a missed opportunity, but if I wasn't chayv, I wasn't obligated in the mitzvah to begin with, then the concept of Tashlumin is really meaningless. And now the Rosh, with that background, raises the following question. What if you have a situation where it comes Motzei Shabbos, and the person didn't recite Havdalah not because he forgot, not because he couldn't find wine, he didn't recite Havdalah because he was exempt from Havdalah. Would there be a makeup for such a person or not? What is the halacha? So the Rosh quotes, this was a major dispute between the Rishonim. What is the Havdalah of post-Motzei Shabbos? Is it makeup? And if it's makeup, then there's only makeup for someone who is chayav in a mitzvah. If it's not makeup, it's just that's the zman of Havdalah, so you could pick up a mitzvah halfway through as well. What's a practical application of this? There are actually two examples that are given in the Rishon. One is a situation, Rahman Mitzlan, a situation of aninus. Let's say a person lost an immediate relative. For argument's sake, a person passed away on Shabbos. So the halachas of aninus don't really begin on Shabbos, because all of the halachas of aninus are the halachas that are geared towards taking care of the karov, taking care of the relative. We want to encourage the karov and the relatives to get involved in the kvura, bring a spade, the kvura, etc. On Shabbos, you cannot really do anything for the kvura. Therefore, technically, the halachas of aninus don't apply. So say, for example, if Rahman Aslan, somebody passed away on Shabbos, the owning, so to speak, the immediate relatives still daven, they still observe the mitzvahs of Shabbos, they still recite brachas, but the second the Shabbos is over, they do not daven, they do not recite brachas. Halachas that owning doesn't perform mitzvahs, doesn't recite brachas. So the owning will not recite Avdol Mitzvah Shabbos. Now the question becomes, on Sunday, after the kavura, after the funeral is over, the owning now becomes no longer an owning, now it becomes an avel, becomes obligated in mitzvahs. Does he recite Havdalah on the spot? Is that the first mitzvah that he recites? Does he do the mitzvah of Havdalah? Do we say no? Since he missed it, let's say Shabbos, because he was potter. An onen does not do mitzvahs. An onen is not like the person who forgot to make Havdalah. An onen is not like the person who couldn't find one. Onen was not allowed to recite the brachas. Would the onen recite Havdalah on Sunday afternoon? So that was a big dispute between the Rishonim. And the custom, the way we practice, is that the onen does. The onen slash Avol now does recite Havdalah. Because we assume that the Havdalah of Sunday, of Monday and Tuesday, is not really a Tashlum type of Havdalah. It's actually, that is the Zman of Havdalah. It's actually for the same reason why there was a Machlokas in the Rishonim about when Tisha B'Av falls out either on Sunday or on Shabbos and Peshrof to Sunday. And obviously there's not going to be Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos. You can't make a brach, you can't drink the wine on Motzei Shabbos. Do you recite Havdalah Motzei Tisha B'Av or not? So some Rishonim said no. Some Rishonim said, since the Halacha prohibits us from reciting Havdalah Mitzvah Shabbos, there's no Tashlumen for that. And others say no. But Havdalah on Sunday night is not Tashlumen. Havdalah on Sunday night is part and parcel of the Ika Mitzvah of Havdalah. And that's what our practice. That's why Halacha L'maaseh, so when we have these kinds of Tisha B'Av, we actually push it off until Sunday night. There's somewhat of a humorous story about the Havdalah of Motzei Tisha B'Av. So those who have been at the Kosel on late in the afternoon on Tisha B'Av may be well aware that NCSY Kol has an age-old practice where they go to the Kosel late in the day, a little bit before Shkia, and they have a kumzit. They sit on the floor and sing moving songs, stirring music, things related to Chorban and Tefillah, looking forward to maybe Bana Mikdash. Very, very beautiful, moving event. Obviously, it's open for the whole tzibur, and many, many people participate in this. And then as soon as Tisha B'Av ends, and they dive a Meirev, and then usually go up to the Rova to grab a little bit quickly something to eat, and back to Kollel campus. But when Tisha B'Av falls out, either on Shabbos and is pushed off to Sunday, or on Sunday itself, then it becomes almost like a logistical nightmare to try to make Havdalah. You can just imagine, hundreds of people pushing and, running and Meirev's over and trying to get up to get something to eat, and trying to hop around and get everybody to bring inside Havdalah. So we usually have to use a little bit of creativity to make sure everybody hears Havdalah. I've had the Baruch Hashem, the experience many, many times. It makes for beautiful Achdus in Klal Yisrael. I've seen Havdalahs put together with you can have one person bringing the coats and another person prying the grape juice and one person drinking and one person eats. And I've heard Havdalahs from Chassidish to Sfardi, from Breslov to Yeshivish, you name it, across the board. Everyone's got the same goal. Who's got to hear that Havdalah? So I remember a couple of years ago, I realized that, when they make the Havdalah Mitzvah Tisha B'Av, you're really supposed to make Havdalah like Kos. And a Kos means a regular Kos. It's not really proper, like a Chil, at least, to make a Havdalah or a Kiddush, for that matter, on a disposable cup. The Yevit, Moshe Paskas, Yotzei, but it's not the Kofedik to do that. You're really supposed to make it a Kos, a real, real bona fide Kos. So I decided one year, when that happened a couple of years ago, I'm going to bring my Kos. I have a Kos in the summertime that we usually make Kiddush on in the Shabbos and Kolo. So I brought that Kos together with me for Matzai Tisha B'Av. I stuck it in my pocket and carried it with me. And we got the Havdalah. So I was always ready to, they should recite Havdalah, the Kos. With all the pushing and hustle and bustle that was going on, so the person who was responsible saying Havdalah was standing on a chair trying to catch 300 young men who were very hungry and on the way to go eat pizza and get their attention. So he stood up on the chair and started to say, Barpia Goffin and Mavdil. And I saw that he's pouring into a regular paper cup, disposable cup. And I was trying to get my coast to him in enough time. And as he was about to start the burp, as I shoved my coast, he's playing a hot potato burp. One brother gets up to the person standing on the chair. And he realized the chapa was going on. and immediately he empties the contents of the plastic cup into the kos, and he makes the Abdullah Kedas for them and the Mechob Kos. So good, Baruch Hashem, we're successful. You know, the world that we live in today, you can't hide anything. And everybody throughout the world can see every single thing that you do. It's a very powerful muscle, that particular Nakuda, but it's true. Within, I would say, 2 seconds after that happened, after Abdullah was over, I get a text from a friend of mine in America who was watching the Kumsitz online, who was following them, watching us Davin Meir, and was watching the Havdalah. And he texted me literally within 2 seconds, clutch move, Rabbi. Like, wow, he was so impressed. He saw me handing the cup, going from one person to the next, and off for Abdullah. So, everything that we do, Ben Larab, hopefully Ben Latoyev only, because Baruch Hu looks down. Every single thing we try to do, Kadosh Baruch Hu will give us chayav for, even the little things, even the give a little extra cover to the kosher lavdala. So what we really try to accomplish in the world of halacha tonight is to try to understand a little bit the notion of tashlumin, to try to show how, although tashlumin in terms of Pesach Sheni is really very, very far removed from us, it's really a korbanos, it's a mikdash type of sugya, but it spills over to us. It's relevant for us. It impacts on our Hilchos Tefillah. It impacts on sugyas of Tachanun. It impacts on the bits of Avdala. Kohenah v'Kohenah. The sugyas of Tashlumin are very much alive and well for us today. I want to just conclude just a little bit of the Bechizav, the Be'ezorus, in terms of just the very notion of Tashlumin, the very notion of makeup in a sense, as we started the Shiva by saying, it really is it's a tremendous Chiddush, that there should ever be a concept of Tashlumin. You blew it. It's over, the game's over, finish, come back next season. And yet sometimes, the halacha tells us, there is a concept of tashlum. The concept of tashlum is very much rooted in midas harachamim. We know, Chazal tells us, that there are 2 different midas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, so he almost combined 2 different aspects and merged and infused them together. The world is created with a little bit of a shukras, a little bit of a partnership, so to speak. Not chalila, it's one HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem HaKadosh Me'echad. HaKadosh Baruch Hu acts in different ways. And sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu displays as midas hadin, and sometimes midas harachamim. And the world was actually created by a combination of the 2. V'yom, asos Hashem Elokim Eretz V'Shemayim, Hashem Hashem Yud Kivokim, is the name that's always used in Sefer Vayikra. That's the name synonymous with Karbonos. That's the name of Rachamim, Midas Rachamim, Hashem Hashem Kachan, Rachamim Kachan. Elohim is the notion of din, of justice, strict justice. B'yayim Asos Hashem Elohim Eretz Hashemayim means HaKadosh Baruch created the world, the combination of the 2. Because if HaKadosh Baruch would have only created the world through Midas Adin, the world could never stand. A person would do a sin and they would immediately be removed from this world. The concept of tshuva would be non-existent. So our world today exists of a combination of Midas Adin, combined, merged, joined together with Midas Harachamim. And the notion of Tashlumin clearly emanates from Midas Harachamim. The fact that a person gets a second chance is an expression of Midas Harachamim. Midas Adin wouldn't tolerate such a thing. You made a mistake, whether you made it intentionally, unintentionally, you didn't make a mistake, you forgot, it doesn't make a difference. You missed Shacharis, it's over, the game's over. And steps of Midas Harachamim says, there's a second chance for you. Come Pesach, too late. Midas HaRachamim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no. True, you missed your Dalet, Nisan. You know what? Come Pesach is just too important for us to let that Jew miss. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will find, Mitachas Kisei Chavayde, will find, like we say in the Davening and Ila, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should find the path, Tachas Kisei Chavayde, HaKadosh Baruch Hu finds that Eitzah, that Pesach, that opening for us in the Sugi of Rachamim, and gives us the Parasha Pesach. So the notion of Rachamei Shanayim, the notion of a second chance, is something which is really the underlying theme of our entire sugya. And I think that there are really 2 important lessons that we can walk away with from the notion of Midas Rachamim, particularly in terms of Tashlumin. Chazal tells us that the Midas are the Moedin Kach Moedin Dinoi. That the Kadosh Baruch Hu acts towards us and views us through the lens that we use to view others. Sometimes we treat others and we look at others, we observe others' behavior through the Midah of Midas Adin. We judge very carefully and very critically, and we don't give our friends and neighbors a second chance. If they messed up in our eyes and they did something wrong to us, we're not forgiving. We don't look at them through that lens of rachamim, of compassion, that we are all human and we all make mistakes. But if we're able to somehow lift ourselves out of that and look towards others and give others that midas erachamim glance. That is the way to ensure that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give us midas erachamim as well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will look down at us through rachamim shemayim with compassion and loving kindness and give us another chance as well. And I think the notion of tashlumin is also something which is critical all the time in Avodas Hashem, but it's perhaps even more nogela maisa in the very, very unique time in our lives. And we are all going through a very, very unique time in our lives. Something that we've never gone through before, and we hope and pray do not have to repeat ever again. It's a time of, in a certain sense, of missed opportunities. Each and every person has lost, to some degree, something. Rahman al-Itzlan, we know. Terrible, terrible tragedy. Some people have lost things that in Olam Hazeh, not replaceable. But even those who have not suffered those degrees of losses. We've all lost opportunities. We've all lost dreams. We've all lost things that we looked forward to. There were things that we thought would happen over the last several months, did not happen. There are things that we're looking forward to hope to happen in the next several months. And somehow, you know, we have a sense of very, very strong foreboding that they may just not happen, or at least not to the degree and the way that we wanted them to happen. And there's a certain kind of a yush almost that sets in, a certain type of a depression, a certain type of a feeling of sadness that takes us over. And again, a certain sense, naturally, it's understood. And yet the HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to us, specifically at this time, and we don't know the timetable of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. People are trying to figure out what they think is the right timetable. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give them the siyata d'shmaya to work out the details in the most proper way, in the correct way. It should be the safest way. But in the end of the day, no human being today really knows the timetable. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what the timetable is. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows about how we'll have the opportunity to make up for those lost opportunities. And whatever it means, and whatever some impact that this may have had in our Avodas Hashem, and all these tefillos that were lost in a sense, all the tefillos b'tzibur that were lost and in a certain sense can't be made up. And all these perhaps learning opportunities and perhaps chesed opportunities and the Pesach of the year Toshin Pei will never ever come back to us again. Maybe when a mikdash, maybe a Pesach Sheni. But some of the things that we have lost over the last several months may have been lost in a certain sense. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu has tremendous rachamim in us. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will, at the time that he sees fit, shower that compassion upon us, upon his beloved people, and upon the entire world, and give us the opportunity to, in a sense, make up, in whatever shape or form that is. And perhaps some of our making up can be some of the lessons, and some of the internalizing, and some of the messages. And again, this is not time for Musar and any specifics, far be it for me to be such a person. Each person has to work on themselves. Individuals have to work on themselves. Smaller groups of tzibur have to work on themselves. And a great tzibur class, well, we have to look internally and see what can we improve? How can we become better people? How can we become greater of the Hashem from this experience that in our wildest dreams we never thought we would have to live through? And it is through the process of tshuva that we have the greatest opportunity to, in a sense, make up for missed opportunities. Because what may have been a loss of a particular life event, a yontif, a learning opportunity, a tefillah opportunity, a mitzvah opportunity, what may have been in a sense a loss may actually become the engine for growth, may actually become an impetus to recreate our Avodas Hashem, perhaps rework on our Binyan L'Chaveiro, be able to become greater people, Avodas Hashem could reach higher heights, dafka from and through those lost and missed opportunities. So the message of Pesach Sheni rings to us loud and clear, that only in the intricacies of Hilchos Tefillah and Hilchos Tachanun and Hilchos Havdalah, but perhaps rings even louder and even clearer in terms of Avodas Hashem, and particularly of this season of the time of the year of Toshin Pei, the year that on the one hand was a time of certain missed opportunities, but it's up to us to turn those missed opportunities into great new opportunities. Because Baruch Hu should give us a siyat d'shmaya and should bless us all with the rachmi shemayim to hopefully enable us to be able to turn those missed opportunities into even greater opportunities for ourselves, for Klal Yisrael, open for the entire world. Kol Tov to everybody.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
Everyone, have a wonderful night. So good to see
you
all.
Thank you. Can I ask a question?
Sure, of course. Sure.
Okay. It's a tangent on what you said about the for Aninus, if you're an Oni, then you missed Havdalah because Havdalah isn't part of Shabbos. If I heard it right. Just from I remember when I was learning about women and Havdalah, that would have great nafkaminas if Havdalah was not part of Shomer Zohar or not. Would that be related to that in any way? Is that
excellent? Excellent question. So what you're referring to is actually a major dispute in the Rishonim about is Havdalah really, in a sense, part of Zohar and almost part of the Mitzvah Shabbos? That's the Rambam's view. And therefore, it would follow that women would be obligated in Havdalah for sure. And then there are others who suggest that Havdalah is not really part of Zohar. It's a separate independent mitzvah, which would then run into a question, is it bound by the rules of mitzvah seishas mangram? I think that's the machlokes that you're referring to. Here, I don't know whether that would affect the shayla, because in Hilchos Aninus, it's almost like a practical thing. Namely, the reason why an onen makes brachas and Shabbos is because Shabbos is a time when you can't do kvura. So once Shabbos is over, no matter what you call Havdalah in terms of the world of lumdus that you're referring to, Tachlis, bottom line is you can do kura now because Shabbos is over. So I think it may not necessarily be connected. But good, very excellent point.
Thank you.